Welcome to Beyond the Byline, the Eagles bi-weekly podcast. As always, I'm Evan Margiotto, your host. This week, we're showcasing three projects going on at the Eagle. The first is from news, coverage of an Aramark employee's dismissal from the university. Second is a collaborative project between our sports and multimedia staff that takes an in-depth look at the women's basketball team. And the third is a series of opinion pieces by Steph Black on domestic violence. Over the last 2 months, Dan Papskin has been covering the dismissal of Aramark employee Anthony Randolph. Randolph had worked in food service and delivery at AU for 17 years. He was released in September due to 4 outstanding parking tickets and allegations that he fled from a parking enforcement officer. But Randolph claims that he did not flee from the officer and was not warned that the parking tickets were grounds to be fired. In response, Unite Here, Local 23, the union that represents all Aramark workers on campus, has called for his reinstatement. They have circulated a petition that has garnered over 450 signatures and passed out more than 400 flyers. I was really excited to bring Dan in so that I could talk to him about how he went reporting on the story that's been developing since September. Dan, thank you so much for being here. You've been reporting this story since the beginning of the semester. Give me a rundown of what it looked like to be reporting on this matter for such an extended period of time.
Thanks for having me. It was especially interesting because it was really my first story that I did for the Eagle. I picked it up at our first pitch meeting, so I was really, really new. I'm a freshman at American. So reporting this story kind of taught me a lot about how the university administration functions and like the offices that people might not know so much about. So I had to call a bunch of people that are kind of common knowledge at the Eagle, but I've never heard of. And so I kind of went into it with this very outsider perspective of like just trying to learn everything I possibly could about like who's in control of what and like what office interacts with like what part of like food service. And so I started talking to a lot of people, but one of the biggest issues was I only had people telling me things. I didn't have any actual evidence.
So let's talk about that email. This is an email between Anne-Maureen Powell, the director of the One Carta Dining Services, and Turk Daniels, who is head of Aramark operations at AU. How did you get that email, and then what did it end up showing?
So the union gave me the email. They kind of showed me a screenshot and then later emailed it to me. And it was just a one-sentence email that said the executive director of auxiliary services has requested that Anthony Randolph be banned from campus. Mm-hmm. Anthony Randolph was the food service worker who kind of this all centered on.
So I think your reporting on the story gives maybe listeners a bit of a view into kind of the university procedure when reacting to allegations and then reacting to us as student journalists coming and asking us questions. How do the different departments of the university work together to refer journalists' questions to the places where they should end up or where spokesmen can actually give us answers?
Yeah, great question. So basically what would happen is, let's say call parking services. So there's a whole aspect of the story about how Anthony Randolph may or may not have had like issues with this one parking enforcement officer. And so I called parking services to try to get like their comment, try to see what they like if they would talk to me. And basically, they immediately referred me to Mark Story, who's director of AU's strategic communications. And the same thing would happen with whenever I tried to call auxiliary services. Very occasionally, someone at the office itself would talk to me, but almost the entire time I had to go through this one person.
Mm-hmm. Is that just so the university can make clear its policies and have kind of one central story on this and not conflicting messages from parts?
Yeah, and that's also just in case of legal issues like personnel, confidentiality stuff. Some people just aren't authorized to talk about certain things and they could like just accidentally give me information that I really shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. So he's authorized to really talk about the information that needs to be talked about.
So this story got published on the 5th of November. We're recording this on the 10th of November. What has happened since you published this story?
Yeah, so one thing you have to realize is that the editing process for this story was extremely long. So I finished like writing the story halfway through October, I want to say. And then like I did add bits to it as things happened. But in general, that entire period from the middle of October, say, or late October to now, isn't included in the story. And nothing major happened, like nothing life-changing, but we did have to make some edits. And so things that have happened are there have been more student protests. That's kind of the big thing. I'm not sure if there's been like specific leafleting, but I know they have gone to multiple events and tried to like bring awareness to the issue. Probably seen them, a lot of the food service workers at, say, TDR have buttons or pins.
Sure. So in the future, we can expect more content coming out from Dan. Basketball season is upon us, and with it comes the release of the Eagles' first multimedia project of the year on the women's basketball team. Part of our goal as a paper has been to incorporate more audio and video to our standard coverage. This project, which is accessible at theeagle.online, showcases each of the members of the women's basketball team in interviews filmed over the course of a month, and this project really drew on staff from across the Eagle. This project was led by Kimberly Cottadella, the managing editor for sports, and Sasha Jones, the managing editor for multimedia. Video is from Giorgio Chitarella and Phoebe Jessup. Web design was by Lydia Colitri and Sophia Williamson-Garcia. I got the chance to sit down with Kimberly and Sasha to explain how they coordinated the creation of this amazing project. Kimberly, welcome back to the podcast. I think you are our first returning guest.
Amazing.
And Sasha, thank you for finally stepping out behind the curtain and sitting down to record.
Yeah, happy to be on the other side.
Awesome. So talk to me about the process for making this multimedia project. What does it take to make something this big, and how long did it take y'all to design this?
Yeah, so this is my second multimedia project with sports specifically. We've done a few. We did one with Life, and then we did one with news with our previous editor-in-chief, Courtney. So this was our second one for sports. I've worked with Kimberly on all of our sports ones. They're all focused on women's basketball in particular. So it was interesting to follow the team and go back. This was a heavier lift than our previous sports project because our previous one was kind of one day looking at the audience, looking at the fans, and I did all my filming on that one day. With this, we were really working with the sports department, and so it required us to come back. We sat in on probably like a month's worth of practices with going to one practice a week.
So Kimberly, you usually report on the women's basketball team already. What is it like to bring Sasha in and to incorporate more multimedia to your reporting that you usually do on sports?
This was my goal for this year. So as my second year covering women's basketball, my first year as sports editor, I wanted to make sure that we incorporated a lot more video, digital, multimedia, anything when it comes to covering the team. Because last year I focused a lot on print and just did whatever I was able. But this year, I wanted to learn everything that I could. So that's where I brought on Sasha, because Sasha is super talented when it comes to multimedia and taught me really so much. So when we were making this project, we were in the office until 3 a.m. multiple nights. And it was just the two of us looking at Adobe Premiere to edit down the video. And she taught me how to set up all of the cameras when we got to the court. So I wanted to make sure that I would be able to do this one day on my own. So this was my intro to it. And I hope that we'll be able to bring this into more elements of the sports section instead of just my part, which is women's basketball.
So what do we say when we mean a multimedia production? What does that entail for y'all?
When it comes to multimedia, that's something that the Eagle hasn't been amazing at previously. So we've always been focused on photography, but never really other things that can be multimedia. And it's interesting to think through, okay, what can be a normal story, a print story, which could be news, it could be life, it could be sports, even opinion. And then saying like, okay, what if we made a video for this? What if we did some audio for this? I think even with this podcast, like that's not something that we've done before. And so it's interesting to think through our storytelling in new ways and to really be inclusive of people that might not be able to, you know, enjoy a print story or might just like not have the time on their hands to read it, but they might have time to watch it. They might have time to listen to it.
When you are going and filming at basketball practices, what did you do with all that footage? How do you decide what to use, what not to use? What is going to go into this page that y'all made to highlight the women's basketball team?
So there was a lot of footage that while it was being recorded, we already knew that it was going to go in. So we actually shot one of our practices was on Halloween. So everybody showed up in costume, and one of the sophomore guards, her name's India Sanders, she showed up in a Pickle Rick costume. It was so funny. So she comes in and all the coaches are laughing at her, and her teammates are going, oh, Indy, shoot it, man. Shoot it. She takes a shot, like falls on her face. And we got it all on camera. So we just looked at each other saying, yeah, that's definitely going to be the video. And there was another, and same with India. India's just like the biggest jokester of the team. And she saw that the camera was still recording. So she looked over at Sasha and goes, is this rolling? And she walks up and starts dancing. And we put both of those clips in.
So y'all have all this footage. Y'all have this audio of all the women basketball players. How do you transform that into the multimedia project that we saw online? Where do those online editors, Lydia and Sophia, come into play? How do we put it all together?
It starts with an idea. All of them do. And it's a matter of actually getting that idea kind of on paper. Whenever we do have something that we're like, okay, we really want to do this, that's when the magic kind of comes in. And, you know, in this case, Kimberly comes in and she says, like, I want to bring my vision to this. And then I think it through more visually. And I'm like, okay, this is what that can actually look like. And so then we go out, we schedule, we plan with the PR department. And we go out with our cameras. And in that time, we're also talking to Lydia just so that she's on the same page with us. But her part doesn't really come in until pretty much when we're editing down all the footage and at the very end. So she's kind of like the last person with her hands on it.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts about this project is that we got six names on it. And I have the basketball knowledge, expertise. And then Sasha comes in with her team, Phoebe and Giorgio. And then we had Lydia and Sophia, as we were saying, do the web design. So if we didn't have Sophia, for example, our page wouldn't have looked the way it did. And if we didn't have Giorgio, Giorgio actually used a fisheye lens on a lot of our B-roll. So you can definitely see a difference there.
So this project obviously took a while. And like you said, was a pretty heavy lift. What is it like to work together for this period of time on something this big?
Yeah, so Kimberly and I, like, we've had classes together. We're in the Eagle office together. But whenever you're working with someone for so long for this project, like, we still obviously love each other, mm-hmm. but there would be days that she'd come into the office and be like, I fucking hate you, Sasha. And that's just like I'm going like delusional from like editing and she's like delusional from me being delusional. That's just the way that it is, honestly. Like there are days where I'm working on print right now as we're recording, and I get Haley yelling at me because like some stupid reason. It's not serious, and that's what's so great about it is that like we are a super caring staff and we do all collaborate and work together really well. But there are going to be times where you're like, don't look at me, don't touch me, don't like, and you gotta just be like, okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, by day three of us being in the office until 2 a.m., 3 a.m., we were all in our separate corners, where I was in the back left corner and Sasha's in the back right corner and Haley is sitting in the middle between us, because we were on top of each other for so long. This project took a month. So we were on top of each other for so long that by the end of it, it was like, well, I'm just going to do my vision and put in my headphones and please don't talk to me for 2 hours. And then when we come back together, it was like we needed our rest from each other because we were together all the time. But exactly what you said, we respect everybody on staff, specifically the editors, because the editors are promoted for a reason and they have their expertise. So if I didn't have Sasha with this project and I had Nick, for example, who's like opinion guy who doesn't know what I wanted
Good
to do.
Luck.
Yeah, what I wanted to do with my multimedia, it wouldn't have gone as well. So we absolutely chose the people that we chose for very specific reasons. And I'm really happy that we did.
So obviously, Sasha, I know one of your goals for this year is to incorporate more multimedia overall for the Eagle. How is this project part of that goal? And what do you plan on doing next?
Yeah, I came into this role and I was like, I want to do everything. I was like, I want to get drones. I want to get like 360
That's true.
Video.
She did want drones.
Drones are unfortunately like there's a lot of regulations around drones in DC. So therefore, the Eagle does not have a drone, but I'm going to try to figure it out. Anyways, so I came in with a bunch of high hopes. And I think that we've done a really great job of achieving this. Last year, Courtney, like, I came in as a print designer, and Courtney was like, oh, I hear you know how to do video. And I was like, oh. So then I slowly started doing video last year. And then this year, I was like, okay, well, let's do more video. Let's do more graphics. Let's do more podcasts. Like, and a lot of it comes with growing a staff. So I would really love to grow a staff that is good at multimedia or is willing to learn multimedia, because I'm self-taught in everything that I do. So even there, I like constantly know like okay, this might be a good video, but how do we do better in the future? And how do we make it more fluid? And how do we... So even with this, like, there are times where I'm hitting my head against the wall because I want it to be better and I just don't have the capacity to do it. So a big part of my plans are growing my staff and getting in more people that are great at what they do and want to share that with the world.
That's really awesome. So for all of y'all listeners, please check out our Women's Basketball Multimedia Project online. Thank y'all so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Finally, our opinion section featured a four-piece series by Steph Black, published during the month of October, meant to raise awareness about domestic violence. For that same reason, I wanted to bring Steph on to talk about how we can improve our discussions and preconceptions about domestic violence on college campuses. Steph, thank you so much for being here. You released this series on domestic violence over the course of Domestic Violence Awareness Month. What were some of the reasons behind you wanting to do this series?
There were a few reasons. First is it was Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So this is the month during the year where we spend most of our time and energy focusing on this one individual topic, as opposed to the multiple issues that women face in terms of anti-violence. For example, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. For DVAM, though, I wanted to really focus on what abuse and domestic violence, also known as intimate partner violence, looks like on college campuses. In recent years, rightfully so, most of the anti-violence conversation has focused on sexual assault prevention and examining what sexual assault looks like. But in that process of bringing that to the spotlight, we have shifted our focus away from looking at other forms of violence, such as domestic violence. So the series really was a re-examination of what we already know about domestic violence on campus and bringing it back into the spotlight for this month.
How do you go about writing a piece about something so personal, not just that the topic's so personal, but about having a conversation with another friend? How do you provide a guide of action for somebody when it is on something so important like this?
You make sure it's trauma-informed. I did a lot of research on what it means to hold space for people who are holding trauma and their need and desire to disclose it. And there's a lot of writing out there on best practices on how to respond, because it's true what they say is that, you know, when a survivor discloses their assault, how well they're initially treated in that first disclosure can make or break their entire recovery for years.
So we're on a college campus, and that means that the ways in which college students experience domestic violence may be different from the other ways that it's talked about in the media. So kind of going off of your second article that you published, what are those unique ways in which college students experience domestic violence differently than others?
Yeah, college is such a unique population for so many reasons when talking about violence, anti-violence work. Specifically when it comes to domestic violence, violence is a continuum and a spectrum, and there's so many aspects of power and control, which is what domestic violence is. It's forms of power and control over a victim. It can be really challenging to pinpoint the ways that abuse functions on campus, but it is crucial to do so. And one of the most recently acknowledged forms of abuse that isn't still widely talked about is academic abuse. And looking at the ways that academics are used in abusing victims and exerting power and control over victims. There isn't a ton of, I don't think there's actually any real scholarship on the ways that college students are abused using academics, but there's starting to become more popular discourse. More nonprofits are talking about it, and more like anti-violence organizations are talking about it. And then other forms of abuse can look different, although they might not be unique to college campuses like academic abuses, but they function differently. So, for example, if we look at stalking, it is really easy to stalk people on college campuses because we all live in the same place. We have a set schedule. We are geographically, you know, right on top of each other. Truthfully, it's easy to stalk people on college campuses.
And before we go, if you or somebody you know you think is experiencing domestic violence, where should they go?
Oasis at AU is going to be your best resource. Open 9 to 5 on weekdays. We have two victim advocates that are dedicated to helping college students talk and figure out what is happening, what their next steps are. Maya and Sarah are the two victim advocates, and they are great resources and are able to connect you with all other AU and DC resources. Additionally, OASIS is a confidential resource, meaning that if you want to launch a Title IX investigation, that is up to you when and how you do that. Any conversation you have with Maya or Sarah, the victim advocates, is entirely private and confidential.
That's all the stories from this week. Beyond the Byline will return after Thanksgiving break. Thanks to Dan, Kimberly, Sasha, and Steph for coming onto the podcast. Beyond the Byline is produced and edited by the wonderful Sasha Jones. In this podcast description, you can also find Sasha or I's email where you can send us feedback, which we really appreciate. And from all of us here at the Eagle, have a great Thanksgiving break.